Okay, let's learn some Rashi's. Good morning. Some Rashi's in Parshas Korach. Okay, so a Magefa breaks out because the complaining continues and people are dying, and Moshe dispatches Aaron to literally arrest the Malach, to halt his proceedings, and he takes Kitaras. The Lashon of the Pasuk is Vayamod Beinim Asim Uvein Achayim Teatzar Magefa. Literally, Aaron's standing in the breach between people who have already been killed and people who are dying very quickly, and somehow he halts the Magifa. Now, we don't know what happened in that moment. Like, how did the Magifa halt? What did Aaron do? So Rashi quotes a fascinating story. It's one of these supernatural stories, and just because of why is Rashi quoting it? Aaron grabs the Malach HaMavis, literally. Achaz is Malach HaMavis, and Midro al Karcho. He says, stop. So Aaron's holding the Malach HaMavis in place. And Malach HaMavis says, you got to let me go. I'm an agent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm like Malach HaMavis. Hinei hanech li lasel shlichusi. So Aaron says, wait a second. I'm here as an agent of Moshe. Malach HaMavis says, but I'm an agent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And just because you're a shliach of Moshe, you can't halt my agency from above. So Aaron says, no, wait a second. I'm an agent of Moshe, but who do you think told Moshe? Who do you think Moshe's operating under? So I'm really under the same authority of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore I've got rights. At which point, they don't know what to do. Aaron says, you know what, let's go to the Ol Moed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe are there. We'll have a court case. We'll adjudicate this. We'll see who's got the upper hand, you or me. There's a lot about nothing. This is not a normal story in the Medrash. Malach HaMavis meets Aaron. Aaron meets the Malach HaMavis. He holds him. Who's your sponsor? My sponsor, my brother's stronger than your brother. I'll get my brother to beat up your brother, like in a grade school. And also, they have to resolve it by going to the Ohel. What's really happening here? What's happening here is, this is a gloss. This is a parallel story to Korach. Korach was not just questioning Aaron's selection as a Kohen, as opposed to the rest of the Levium, but also Moshe's decision. It was a two-pronged assault, Korach. One is, why should Aaron consolidate all the power? Why are you the Kohenim? Kikoleda kulam kirushim. But part of it was Kiti Stara and Leinu Gami Stara. Is asking Moshe Rabbeinu, who gave you the right to make these appointments? It wasn't just the who was appointed, but the methodology of appointment. How did you go about? Who told you? You're just doing this for personal gain, for personal interest, personal ego. You're consolidating too much power. And that second claim was so transparently wrong. Moshe was just operating based on a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So this is a way not just to defend Aaron's selection, which happened during the Matos, but to defend Moshe's authority. And this is what was happening on the terrestrial realm between Korach and his band of rioters was now happening on a cosmic realm. That Moshe's authority is not being questioned. And Aaron is saying, no, Moshe is not making things up. Moshe is not acting independently. Moshe is being dispatched from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And now they say, okay, let's go to the Ol Moed and let's discuss this in public. Everyone's watching. And this is a way to reinforce Moshe's authority. So Aaron's authority has been reinforced by the Matos and the flowering of Aaron's Mata. What about Moshe? Is he making arbitrary decisions? Is he making selfish decisions? Is he making egotistical decisions? So now what happened on the terrestrial realm is being played out on the cosmic realm. And now Moshe is making decisions not to consolidate power, at least to the onlookers of Korach's rioters. Moshe is making decisions to save their lives. The consequences of Moshe's decisions now in his confrontation with the Malach HaMavis is going to be whether people live or die. So it's not just, oh, we'll reinforce Moshe Rabbeinu's authority on a cosmic realm and you'll see the folly and the stupidity of some of the arguments, but the reason and the motive for Moshe's decisions are not selfish, but the reasons for his decisions are selfless and preserving life and trying to protect you. So the two parts of Moshe's record that have to be defended. One is, whose authority is he operating under? Kodesh Baruch Hu. Two is, what is he trying to do? He's not trying to exploit people and manipulate them and impose his will on them. He's trying to save lives. And saving lives in this case is literal. Saving lives in another case may be just to make sure that the basic condition and the Mishkan are functioning properly, which has to be an orderly distribution between the Kohanim and the Levim. So this story is exactly the Korach story. But it's about Moshe and not only Aaron's selection and his authority. And the Malach HaMavis is playing the role of the straw man. He's there to say, oh, this is what Korach made. This is the claims that Korach made. And now they see it on a cosmic level and they feel more convinced about it, especially because it's coming to save lives. So if you see the story in the context of Korach, it makes a lot of sense. Okay, second part of Rashi. Lama b'Ketores. Why do they choose Ketores? Why does Aaron hold the Magefa with Ketores? Well, that's an easy one, although Rashi elaborates. Because a few minutes ago, 150 people died by holding Ketores. And not only that, but they're fresh in the memory, because this is a whole conversation of Aaron, right? So everyone remembers, did Aaron have more than four sons? While we're discussing Aaron, what happened to Aaron's other two sons? They died through Ketores, Eish Zara, Shelet Ziv Hashem, and Parsha Shmini. Remember, Korach is still in that second year. 38 years elapsed between Korach and Chukas. All this Korach is still in the second year. Sometime after Tisha B'Av of the second year, this is all going down. Now, the Jewish people are starting to slur the Ketores. Shayim alisim eranim acha Ketores. They said this Ketores, it's toxic. It's poisonous. Anyone who touches it dies. Nadav and Avihu died. Chamish Mesayimish, 250 people died. Chamish Mesayimish, 250 people died. The Kodesh Baruch Hu says, you know what, I'll show you that the Ketores is not just a death inducer, but it's a death deterrent. And I'll use the Ketores to deter death. Now, what is the Kodesh Baruch Hu concerned of? He has to protect the integrity of the Ketores. The Ketores is going to get some shade thrown at it on social media. It's going to get disliked. Hashem is to protect the Ketores. It's not about protecting the Ketores. It's about a theological question of how you see nature. Is nature divided into good and evil? Or is nature empty of any morality? And it's human decisions that affect nature, in this case, affected how the Ketores would impact. Okay? Ancient paganism looks into nature and sees division and assumes that two things. One is that nature must be full of godly spirit. Two is there must be many gods because nature has many. So if you look into nature and you see spirit of the divine, it's called pantheism, then you're one step away from real paganism. There's two problems here. One is nature doesn't have any spirit. There isn't good water, bad water. Good Ketores, bad Ketores. Once you see nature that way, you fall into determinism. If you drink this water, you'll have a curse. If you drink that water, remember the Mayim in Parshas Naso is not called Mayim Ha'arurim, the water that was cursed. What's it called? Mayim Ha'me'arurim. And Rashi says, water isn't cursed. Water is water. Human beings can then retrofit or adopt water and use it for various purposes, to create a curse, to create a bracha. But the water isn't good or bad. The water, nature is amoral. Nature has no spirit to it. The second you start to impute moral spirit to nature, you fall into a determinism where I don't have a choice. I'm just being operated on by the different forces of nature. So the danger of pantheism is the abdication of freedom of choice. The second danger is dualism and paganism, where if you invest spirit in nature, then while nature has many clashing and conflicting, right? Darwin discovered it, he attributed it to something else, not to spirits, but to some cycle of survival of the fittest. But you look at nature, there's clashes, there's competition. So the ancient pagan mind says, well, there's the gods of fire, I think it's right, the gods of fire, the gods of water, the gods of darkness, the god of light, the god of good, the god of evil. So Hashem is saying, Ketores, Hashem isn't trying to protect the honor of the Ketores. Hashem is trying to say, Ketores is morally neutral. It can lead to death, it can lead to life. It's not about what is invested in the Ketores. What causes it? The last couple words of Rashi, Hachet hu hamemes. It's sin and its consequences that causes death, not objective material and the impact upon human beings. Okay, so the two fascinating Rashis in the same Rashi. One is the battle in heaven, the contest in heaven between Aaron and the Malach HaMavos. That's just a redo of the battle on earth. However, this time Moshe is saving lives, and this time it's clear at a cosmic level that Moshe is not operating on his own. Remember, Korach assaulted two aspects. One is Aaron's selection. Is it fair to consolidate so much power in one family? Maybe we should spread the kahuna amongst all the families of Kas, or all the families of Gershon, Kas, and Merari. Number two is whether Moshe is acting arbitrarily and selfishly. Aaron's selection is being borne by the staffs flowering. Moshe's motives and Moshe's agency is being highlighted by this story. The second part of the Rashi is Ketores does not have any innate or inherent capacity. Nature is just material. It cycles through, right? The preservation of matter. It cycles through. You burn it, it gets created, you burn it. It has no inherent spirit. The dangers of investing nature with spirit is it abdicates freedom of choice, and it leads potentially to paganism or multiple gods. Okay. Let's take a look forward. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivers this new covenant to Aaron. And the covenant means you're not selected for privilege, you're selected for responsibility. And that's why the first thing Hashem tells Aaron is not what you get, what you give, what your responsibilities are, to make sure that people don't encroach upon the Beis HaMikdash, and to make sure that people, when they're in the Beis HaMikdash, are experiencing religion properly, moderately, right through the regulations. There's supposed to be religious monitors and religious assistants and religious facilitators. And then I'll tell you what you get in exchange, Truma and Maisos. But it doesn't start with, oh, here are your privileges. It's here are your responsibilities. Because life is more about duty and responsibility than it is about privileges and rights. We'll talk about this maybe in another couple of days when we get close to July 4th, the great celebration of human rights. Right? Democracy is not about rights. Democracy is supposed to be about duty. Which, of course, when you build a society that's transactional and it's built on rights, not covenantal, built on duty, then the next step is victimization. Because in the competition for rights, how are you going to beat someone? Why do I deserve more rights than you? We're both equal in democracy. The only way I can get more rights than you is to become a bigger victim. If my past was more victimized because I'm of a certain race, of a certain color, of a certain religion, of a certain gender, so then transactionally, since I was, I was more vulnerable and more dispossessed, then now in the transaction, the contract that democracy has become, that rather than a social contract, it's become a financial contract, what I deserve because of the taxes I pay, I deserve more than you because my past is more persecuted than your past. So remember, once you develop a culture of rights, you're one step away from a culture of victimhood, because that's the only way you can jockey to get more rights. I can jockey and say I'm a better person, you have the same DNA. Why should I get more money in this big social contract? Get more money because I've been more persecuted in the past. Okay, so the Kohanim are not about rights, about duty. But if Hashem Baruch Hu calls this new covenant with them, he writes, Vayomer Hashem el Aaron bi'artzem lo tinchal, v'chelek lo tiyeh lechem, kol trumas ha'kadoshim she'erimu, all these trumos, they should be for you, your children, bris melach olam, a salt covenant. Why would the covenant with Aaron be likened to salt? Okay, so the obvious of salt, and salt is much less, it's much less a part of our world. Salt was a major, major, it would be like the internet. You don't move without the internet. You don't move without salt. Whoever has more salt is more wealthy. You ever hear the expression, is that worth the salt? When you would sit down at a table, if you wanted to flaunt your wealth, so today you put your cell phone on the table, you show everyone, I've got the iPhone 26. I've got Samsung 22, whatever, just to flaunt how wealthy you are. People drive cars or yachts to show their wealth, because what's wealth if people aren't jealous of it, right? What's wealth if other people aren't envious of it? In those days, you didn't have cell phones, you didn't have yachts. You would come down and put salt on the table. Not a salt shaker, a huge, huge, ornate mug of salt. You can look in some of the museums in Europe. If you see some of the museums, there are actually salt goblets. More salt than you can use you can actually eat for months. You just put the salt on the table to display your wealth. And that's where the expression was, he's not worth his salt. Even though he has a lot of salt, he doesn't really have that much money, he's just faking, he's just masquerading. So salt was much more part of their lives than preservatives. This was the best way to preserve. So it's necessary just to survive. That's why the Silk Road in the Far East and the discovery of salt in the Far East was absolutely crucial. So the obvious reason that this is a covenant is because it's eternal, it's long-lasting. Salt doesn't decay, salt doesn't decompose. And we don't think of it that way, A, because we have more materials that take longer to decompose. They didn't have plastics, we have plastics. And ask environmentalists, plastics take a long time. Ask the turtles in the ocean, plastics take a long, long time to decompose. Most of the materials were biodegradable. What did they really have in their day? What didn't decompose? Earthenware becomes earth. Wood becomes coals. What if they have that didn't decompose? Metal, you can smelt it and break it down. So they didn't really have that many materials that are slow or didn't decompose. So salt was the image. If you ask something, if you ask them what is durable, we would say titanium. We would say plutonium. Like, plutonium is actually not durable, it's radioactive, but we would say titanium, or we would say something that's very, very slow, or PVC plastics, or they would say salt. So this is an obvious one, and Rashi says, because it's Mitzchayim, this is an eternal contract, eternal covenant. But Rashi says two other things. Salt is also bari umavri. Now, Rashi has a very interesting language, bari umavri. I'm not sure if Rashi actually means health, and there was some medical health of salt that it makes other people healthy, or is he referring to taste, that it brings out the taste. Sugar covers the taste, salt draws the taste. It sounds like he's not referring to what we would feel salt is, that you draw taste down, but actually had some medicinal role, that it was healthy, and it actually turned the other items you were eating into something that had health. Again, whether it was actually, if you salted the meat, did it make the meat more healthy, or just made the meat edible for longer periods, and therefore made you healthier because you had meat available for longer periods. I'm not sure if there's some, when you add salt to an item, did they believe there was some medicinal value, but regardless of the science, experientially, in people's minds, salt was not just associated with durability, but it's also associated with health. That it made something healthy if you ate it, and if you applied it to another material, it also made that material healthy. Again, what the science was is hard to know, but the experience was only that way. So if you played word association with someone, what does salt mean to you? So the top answer would be durability. Second answer would be health. Third answer would be not only health, but it makes other things healthy. Why is that important? Because iron is meant to represent religion, not just to regulate religion, but to be a role model. When you're looking to make religious sense out of your life, you look at role models and you see, what did religion do to them? When I was your age and I came to the yeshiva, what if I look back at my one most powerful memory, I saw these exquisite people who lived lives of nobility and sacrifice and passion and idealism. I said, well, what made them that? And I said, oh, the Torah. So therefore, I really wanted to become more religious because I wanted to have a better life. I sensed that there was a synchronicity between leading a good life and between leading a religious life. So I was invested in it. I was desirous of becoming a better person. Religion is supposed to make you a better person, a healthier person. If religion is not making you a healthier person, then it's the wrong type of religion. It should make you a better son and a better friend and a better student in college. And the pursuit of excellence in all facets of life should be driven by religion. You should become a better person. And religion should be associated with a healthier person. And if you feel that Avodas Hashem is causing you to be less healthy, then you have to check what you're doing wrong. You should feel, oh, I've been in yeshiva 6 months. I'm a better person than I was. I'm a healthier person than I was 6 months ago. Not just that I know how to learn more Torah and my tzitzis are longer, but I feel as if the parts of me are coming together. And here's the second part. Does your religion make people around you healthier? That's a harder thing to gauge. Sometimes when you become more religious, even if you feel more healthy in some aspects, you become more judgmental to other people, become more dismissive to other people, you become too pietudinous to other people. So it's not just you have to check your own health by this religious intake, but you have to check how are you influencing those around you or people in your life, which is generally a good yardstick for life. A good yardstick for whether you're leading a good life is the following statement. Really listen, because it's very important to think about this. Are the people in your world, are their lives enhanced by your life? Sometimes people lead lives that are selfish, although it's not seen that way, but they're so driven by ambition and they're so into themselves that people around them suffer and they're debris. They don't have their time. They're not abusive and in direct sense. Obviously, we're able to call abuse out. But you want to ask yourself at every stage of life, are the people in your life, your spouse, your children, your friends, is their life better because of you? Or is their life worse because you're insensitive to them, because you're rude, because you're selfish, because you're self-centered, because you're... And as you go through life, you can see certain people who lead lives that flower and almost like color. Like you're taking a black and white and turning it into color. Everyone around them is full of color. Or some people, they're leading very, very one track. It's about them and their interests. And the people in their life suffer because of their goals and their interests. So religion is supposed to be healthy, and it's supposed to make people around you feel healthy. And that's why it's compared to salt, not just because it's durable. Okay? Have a good day, everyone. Tomorrow I'll probably be dabbing with my Ryan. So if I'm not here, then we'll continue on Sunday. Good. Thank you.